Authorities say Dalton shot 8 people, killing 6. Neighbor Chad London says Dalton was quiet, kept to himself.
Jason just didn't give no cues or nothing. I don't know if he just decided he was going to wake up in the morning and decide that people had to die.
85% of the state of Nevada is owned by the federal government. That is going to end.
I think the president should make that appointment. I think if the Senate declines to confirm, then we got to win this race.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09, and it is Monday, February 22nd, 2016. Welcome to the program this morning. We have a big show for you coming up later on in our program. We're going to talk with CNN Money correspondent Heather Long about the latest on the markets around the world and the economy here at home in the U.S. And later in the half hour, protests have been scheduled in 30 cities across the country by people who support Apple and are protesting against demands by the FBI that Apple develop some sort of operation to unlock locked iPhones. We'll have a full discussion of that coming up later, and that's in the news this morning as well. We'll also keep tabs on the U.S. and world markets. The market's generally in good condition, as you heard Vic say there in our open newscast. The Dow futures are also pointing toward a higher open this morning. First, your overnight intel, the latest on the global financial markets, not good in London, where the pound is down sharply on concern that Britain's popular vote on whether to leave the European Union could be closer than expected after senior politicians joined the Leave campaign. London Mayor Boris Johnson on Sunday said he would support the campaign in favor of leaving the 28-country bloc, arguing it would restore power over national policies from Brussels. That could have a major impact on world markets as we move through the week. Asian stock markets generally rebounded this week, and this morning, investors are hoping this week's meeting of finance ministers for the group of 20 major rich and developing economies spurs moves to shore up global growth. We're also watching a look at Japan's manufacturing report. That showed activity fell to an 8-month low this month, due largely to weak export. The price of oil this morning is above $30, $32 a barrel. The dollar gained against the yen and the euro. We're going to, on the calendar this week, be watching several big economic reports on Tuesday and Wednesday. There are several gauges that could help the way markets move and way investors act. The Standard & Poor's Case-Shiller Index of Home Prices is released tomorrow. Also, the National Association of Realtors will report on last month's existing home sales. Conference Board has issued the Conference Index for February as well this week. On Wednesday, the Commerce Department releases home sales figures for January. The big news this morning, Apple, the county government that owned the iPhone at the heart of that legal battle between Apple and the Justice Department, reportedly paid for but never installed a feature that would have allowed the FBI to easily and immediately unlock the phone belonging to the suspect that killed 14 people in the terrorist shooting in San Bernardino. If that technology had been installed, San Bernardino police would have been able to remotely unlock the iPhone for the FBI without the theatrics of a court battle that's now pitting digital privacy rights activists against national security concerns. By the way, that service cost about $4 per month per phone. On Friday, we learned that Congress wants to now hold hearings into the matter before the court fight and has asked Apple CEO Tim Cook and FBI Director Jim Comey to attend. Jim Emmons is a correspondent for CNBC and says
they want to hold public hearings on this. They view this as a significant public policy matter and a debate that Congress needs to weigh in on. Interesting here that you're getting both the Democrats and the Republicans on this committee to sign a joint letter with all four of those congressional leaders on that letter.
More and more CEOs of tech companies, including the president and CEO of Virgin Galactic, has come out in favor of Apple and others like Woz, who is a co-founder of Apple. He's also in support of what Apple's doing. Why is this such a big deal, you ask? Dan Guido is an expert in hacking operating systems and CEO of a company called Trailbits.
Many people believe that it's a slippery slope because there's only an upfront cost for this one time. And after Apple has the technology to do it for one phone, it's very easy for them to re-sign this firmware and to do it on a second phone, a third phone, or a 10,000th phone. And that concerns people.
Later again in the broadcast, we're going to be talking with one of the organizers of a protest that is forming. 30 cities across the country so far have set protest for tomorrow, Tuesday. In Chicago, there will be one outside the Apple store. These are folks that support Apple and do not want Apple to develop any technology that would allow anybody to unlock their phone. Encryption, a big deal for those people. Also this morning, report finds that in Hollywood, there's a diversity problem. A study finds that films and televisions produced by major media companies are whitewashed and that an epidemic of invisibility runs top to bottom through the industry for women, minorities, and LGBT people. A study being released today by the University of Southern California offers a wide-ranging examination of the film and television industries, including a pointed inclusivity index, is what they're calling it, of 10 major media companies. It gives a failing grade to every movie studio and almost every TV studio. It's 5:15. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN. Let's get a look at traffic now. How are the roads moving, Mary Vandeville?
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. A bounce back in Asian stocks overnight as overseas investors look to this week's meeting of finance managers. They're hoping the group of 20 rich and developing economies will come up with policies to get a handle on stagnation in many parts of the world. Futures on Wall Street suggest gains for the three major U.S. indices as well. On Friday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down fractionally. The S&P 500 was unchanged, and the NASDAQ Composite was slightly ahead. Bank of America today rolls out a mortgage product requiring a down payment of as little as 3%. Analysts call it an end run around the government agency that punished BOA 2 years ago for making errors on similar loans. Samsung and LG hope to counter a worldwide slump in smartphone growth with better cameras in their phones. The main camera on LG's upcoming G5 will have two lenses, including one with a wide angle. Both companies, Samsung and LG, will soon have virtual reality headsets on the market. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It is 5:20, and in London today, there has been a little bit of upheaval, you could say. The latest on the pound, it's down sharply. Britain's popular vote on whether to leave the European Union is making headlines there today. The latest to come out in support of that is London Mayor Boris Johnson. Let's go live to London. ABC News correspondent Tom Rivers is with us. Tom, we'll talk to you about what's going on in Syria, too. But this is big news in London this morning and across Europe. How big of a deal is it, if you could tell our listeners here in the United States?
Yeah, it's a pretty big deal because Boris Johnson is a big personality here, and he was on the fence for the past few months, didn't know which way he was going to fall. He's in the same ruling Conservative Party as the Prime Minister, and of course, Cameron came back from Brussels and said, look, I've got a deal. We want to stay in the EU, and Boris Johnson says, I've thought a lot about this. No, we want to get out of the EU. So he's going to be the kingmaker, and if he has it right, he could very well be the next leader of the Conservative Party. If he gets it wrong, he could become a historical footnote. So that's kind of fascinating, kind of the background to the referendum, which is coming up on the 23rd now of June.
What would this mean? What would the impact of Britain leaving the European Union be?
I mean, there are a myriad of agreements, trade agreements that would have to be renegotiated one-on-one. It can be done. You look at some countries like, for instance, Norway. Yes, they're doing quite well, thank you. But again, they've got to cut a deal with every individual country as opposed to just saying, this is kind of how we're going to line up our rules with the EU, 28 members. So it's a whole different way to approach things. And some say it frees up the UK. Others say no, it makes it isolated. So that's going to be the big argument as we go forward in the coming months.
The other big story this morning that people on Wall Street and Main Street are watching is the situation in Syria. The latest there over the weekend, there was this huge bombing. What is the situation on the ground there, and what impact is it having globally?
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts. We're talking about this was even a few days before this cessation of hostilities was supposed to take place at the end of last week. Didn't happen. Secretary of State Kerry says it still can happen in the coming days. And you had Syrian government forces with Russian air support knocking on the door of Aleppo. Just yesterday, they captured 31 villages in that part of northern Syria. Down in Damascus, you have ISIS car bombing right by schools, right by the afternoon drive there, killing over 83 in the capital. Also in Homs, same kind of a deal there. In all, about 130 people lost their lives in those car bombs from ISIS. So the question is, you know, who's gonna play ball if we're talking peace? Who's going to lay down their arms? It doesn't look like it's going to happen. But in theory, you've got the diplomats still saying, look, we got a provisional agreement. Let's try to go down that road. Indian people like Assad say, okay, I'm willing to do that if this break doesn't allow for arms, as he said, coming in from Turkey to arm various elements. So it is a mess. And you got Turkey, of course, hitting Kurdish targets in Syria as well. So different factions. It's a proxy war between the various factions there.
The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights has been monitoring a lot of this. In the middle of all of the fighting are the innocent civilians that are there. Last week we thought there was going to be some aid trucked in. Did that ever happen? And how are the human rights agencies dealing with all of this?
They're kind of, they're screaming and yelling, saying, you know, this fighting carries on and more people are dying or people are getting injured. The latest proposal, this came out of Geneva on Friday, is that they're going to try something new and different. Airdrops from Russian planes supplied by NGOs and trying to get food aid in that way to some of these villages that have been besieged for months on end. That hasn't happened yet, but that's the current plan. We'll see how that one plays out, maybe on toward the end of this week.
Is there a possibility that countries like the UK and the United States might have to get more involved in this than they are?
I think it's so messed up. I mean, if you go back, you know, this was yet another country where, you know, the Western powers wanted regime change. Well, guess what? They didn't get it there. And Russia says regime change stopped in Syria. You ain't going to have that anymore. So it was a real snub. And now they don't know what they're going to do. You don't see a whole lot of joined up thinking in Washington or London at this stage of the game. They're kind of sitting back going, wow, look what's happening here. Every day the civilian death toll continues to rise. And you got so many different players now in Syria, it is a complete and utter mess.
ABC News correspondent Tom Rivers from the Foreign Desk in London this morning. Thanks for being with us on the Opening Bell, Tom.
Take care.
It's 5:26. By the way, more than 1 in 10 Syrians have been wounded or killed since the beginning of that war in 2011. A new report has found more than 470,000 deaths have been directly caused by the conflict, indirectly or directly. And that tally comes from the Syrian Center for Policy Research. It is, again, 5:26. This is the Opening Bell. Let's head over to the newsroom. Vic Vaughn is standing by with the latest. Vic, what are you covering this morning?
Good morning, Steve. We're covering this shooting rampage in Kalamazoo. We have our own Ryan Burrow getting set in place to start giving us those live reports and just kind of going over the questions that everybody's asking. Is this going to lead to, questions about how Uber vets its drivers? That's what I've been hearing all weekend. Not confirmed yet, but police looking into claims that he may have actually picked up passengers and dropped them off during this rampage. I don't know if, do you use Uber, Steve?
I have not used Uber. I know people that do and have no problems with
it. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
These high-profile incidents are really growing.
Yeah, so we'll give you the latest on that coming right up.
All right, Vic, thanks. It's 5:27 on the Opening Bell.
From ABC News Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, a thermostat that takes care of a problem we all face in our homes during hot and cold times. Many of us have the issue. You have a thermostat in one room, but you're in a different room, sometimes on a different floor, and it's way too hot or way too cold because there's no temperature sensor in that room. Well, now there's a fix. Stuart Lombard is CEO of Ecobee.
Ecobee is a Wi-Fi connected thermostat that helps control the temperature in your home.
I know you're saying there are lots of Wi-Fi connected thermostats on the market. This one has a unique feature.
We have these remote sensors, and these remote sensors measure both temperature and occupancy, so you can put them in the rooms that you actually use.
The sensors are portable. You can place them just about anywhere you want. They send the data wirelessly back to your thermostat.
They're small sensors, about 1.5 inches by 1.5 inches.
The sensors also pay attention to if you're in the room. If the sensors detect you're not around, they may turn down the heat or turn off the AC, the Ecobee 3 goes for between $200 and $300. With Tech Trends, I'm Alex Stone, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:37. Welcome back to the program. The stock market has not been as crazy lately as it was to start the new year. But is that reason for us all to be complacent, or should we still be worried? What's going on in the world? Let's bring in CNN Money contributing editor and Heather Long, who is with us this morning on the opening bell. Good morning, Heather.
Hi, good morning. A lot better.
Yeah, I always am excited to talk to you because you seem to have your finger on just about every piece of knowledge that we need as investors and people with money or just, you know, ordinary Americans. I have to laugh at the picture that is accompanying one of your stories. It's the guy looking up on the stock market floor with his mouth agape. It sort of sums it up, though. I mean, what are we seeing going on in the world right now, and what is the state of things?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're certainly a lot better off than we were probably the last time we spoke about 2 weeks ago when we were down over 10% in the market. And now for the year, we're down right around 5.5. So we've gotten a lot better in the last week. The question, and I think you posed it well, is this rally for real? I mean, is this truly a rebound? Have we hit a turning point? And it's very encouraging to see the what looks like it's going to be a rally today. I think at the end last week, we saw three strong days sort of coming off that holiday weekend. There was a lot of good economic data. We had oil prices seeming to hit, maybe not totally rebounding, but at least staying above $30 a barrel. And so it looked like the world wasn't as scary of a place. But when you talk to traders, when you talk to experts, they were really hesitant to say we've hit that tipping point. Because they want to see a little bit more momentum.
And just when you thought it was safe to go back in the water, we hear this news today from London about the possibility, again, of the UK leaving the European Union. Boris Johnson, the mayor of London, now in support of that. What would that do to world markets and the global economy?
Yeah, we were sort of joking around on Friday that the European Union is trying to make Britain, whatever, they like a special relationship, kind of like it has in the U.S., you know, a special class or a special deal. So Britain seems to love these special arrangements that it has. But, basically, the whole point of the EU, when you think about it, and from a big picture level, is to try to make Europe more important on the world's global stage, right? So think about where we are in the world today. We've got kind of two big superpowers again, China and the United States. And if Europe is going to have any role economically or politically or otherwise, it really believes, a lot of people in Europe who crafted this deal believe that they need to be a united Europe. And from a financial perspective, you know, obviously Britain has its own currency, so it's not like it would totally topple the euro. But they lose some credibility, they lose some up on the world economic and political stage.
I want to hit on a couple of things. You mentioned oil briefly. It appears Iran is on board now with this agreement to cap oil production, but there are some that aren't so sure. Oil has not really been a major driving factor in global stock markets, but it is this year. Why is that?
Yeah, thank God. We seem to finally see there might be a break in this very, I've been calling it a close tango between oil and the market. It really is stunning. You know, historically speaking, as you alluded to, oil and stock, the stock market had almost no relationship at all. The correlation was low to zero, some people even found, depending upon what time period you look at. In the last few weeks since the start of the year, again, it depends on what time period you run, but it's been close to 1-to-1. It's been in the 90s, 90%. So if one's moving one direction, the other one's moving too. I think it's really the way I think about it is the big fear here, everybody knew it's been bad. You know, oil prices have been falling for a long time. Everybody knew that the energy sector was getting pounded. We can pick whatever stock you want, ExxonMobil. Everything's getting pounded in the energy sector. What changed on January 1st were kind of two fears. I think one was that there would be a spillover effect that oil was getting so low and was staying, there just didn't seem to be a bottom to it. So we even saw, you know, the lowest price in over a decade when it hit whatever, under 27 a barrel there at the end of January. So there was kind of this fear, when does it end? And is it starting to drag not just energy down, but we even saw the cost of borrowing for food companies going up. So it was just having this spillover effect, and people didn't know when it was going to end. And so I think that was a big driver. And so what we're, the other thing is obviously the geopolitical situation. It just seemed like Saudi Arabia didn't care. You know, that they just wanted to keep those prices low to try to hurt Iran, longtime political enemy. So even though Saudi Arabia itself is running its first budget deficit in years, they just had to borrow money in the fall to plug their deficit. They haven't had to go to the bond market in years. So Saudi Arabia itself, and the big kicker in Saudi in their early January, finally raised gasoline prices on their own people by 50%. Can you imagine if the United States said, oh, tomorrow the price of gas is going to double?
Yeah.
That's how you know Saudi Arabia is hurting, but they are holding so firm because they want to hurt Iran and they want to drive out our folks in Texas and Oklahoma and the United States. They want to drive some of those companies out of business. And so, again, there was this fear in the market of how long are the Saudis going to basically impale themselves to keep this price low? And so what we saw last week, now they didn't cut production, which is what everybody's really waiting for, but you saw people finally come together, Saudi, Russia, even Iran, Venezuela, and say, well, at least freeze production. And so that's why you kind of see this threshold of, at least we're not going to see oil fall below 30. It doesn't seem like right now. And so, again, there's this belief maybe we're at a tipping point. Nobody quite wants to say it yet, but there's signs that it's forming, that a tipping point, a turning point, even in oil, could be forming.
And then there's the Federal Reserve, which you're right, seems to be getting it.
Yeah, it seems right, exactly. I think you said it pretty well. We've talked before on the program. And when we came in the start of the year, they were very optimistic about the economy. Oh, it's going to grow about the same, if not more, than last year. And, you know, inflation's going to start to pick up. Our wages are going to start to pick up. And so we're probably going to do 4 rate hikes this year. And so, you know, 4 hikes takes us from, we came into the year, you know, with interest rates around 0.25 to 0.5%, so a high level of 0.5. And, you know, if they had done 4 rate hikes this year, if they do 4 rate hikes, that takes us up well over 1%. So that is a bit of a game changer. And I think, again, as the people started to look around the world, these fears started to rise. I think the risk of a U.S. recession is still low, but coming into the start of the year, Janet Yellen, the Fed chair, was like, risk of a U.S. recession, it's about 10%, which is nothing. Well, now you talk to the experts, expert economists on Wall Street and elsewhere, and even at the Fed, they're quietly a little bit more willing to say it. You know, the risk has risen to about 20 to 25%. Now, that's still very, very low. It's not the base case scenario, but that risk is rising, and the Fed has finally acknowledged that, at least they seem to, in Janet Yellen's testimony before Congress a few days ago, and then and we saw on Wednesday of last week, which really helped us. That third big push rally day we had for the market was something called the minutes. The minutes of their meeting in January came out. And, you know, again, when you read through the actual minutes, the actual what people were saying, it sounds like their view of the world, like everybody else, has changed a little bit. They acknowledge more of these risk factors. It seems very unlikely at their next meeting in March, almost negligible chance that they're going to raise rates in March. So, again, it looks like most people think they may do 2 rate hikes this year, if that.
Heather Long is CNN Money's Markets and Investing Editor. Heather, thanks for being with us on the opening bell this morning.
Yeah, hopefully the market keeps rallying.
Let's hope. And you can find Heather on Twitter at @ByHeatherLong. It is 5:45, the latest on traffic now. Here's Mary Vandeveld.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:50 on the futures markets this morning. The Dow pointing toward an open that'll be higher later this morning when the opening bell rings, up 190. S&P futures up 22. Price of oil at $31 a barrel. Latest on commodities now, here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. As we look at last Friday, there was a cattle on feed report issued by the Department of Agriculture after the market closed. It did cause a little bit of touching up of positions going into the weekend ahead of that report, but there really wasn't any need for that because the numbers came in pretty much as the trade expected. For last month, the number of cattle placed on feed at 100%. That means unchanged from the previous month. The number of cattle in feedlots, that was right on the number. And marketings were down 2%. So not much reaction in the market when we open on livestock trade today. Meanwhile, the grain market ended slightly higher for the week. Corn gained 2%. Soybeans and wheat each up about 0.8%, as again, ample global grain and oilseed supplies still limiting the move upward in the commodity market. As we look ahead to this last trading week of February, not much in the way of events or meetings, but early in March, Commodity Classic, attracting grain and oilseed producers in New Orleans. And on March 15th in Washington, D.C., they'll celebrate American agriculture with the National Agriculture Day. Public invited. I'll be there to participate. That's the report for this Monday. Have a good day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. There is breaking news this morning in the story involving Apple and the FBI's demand for backdoor to the iPhone. Apple CEO Tim Cook has sent an email to employees today. He's also posted now online saying that this case, in his words, is about much more than a single phone or single investigation. He says this is an event and a possible precedent that threatens, in his words, everyone's civil liberties. A number of technology CEOs and others are coming to Apple's defense this morning, among them Virgin Galactic CEO Richard Branson, also Steve Wozniak, the co-founder of Apple, on CNBC.
I don't think that the phone should have back doors. I believe that Apple's brand recognition and value in profits is largely based on an item called trust. And trust means you believe somebody. You believe you're buying a phone with encryption. It shouldn't have hidden back doors and ways that you don't know what's going to happen in the future.
There's also a grassroots effort. 30 cities now signed up for protests scheduled for tomorrow in support of Apple and against the FBI. Joining us on the phone this morning on the opening bell is Evan Greer. He's the campaign director for Fight for the Future, I believe is the name of the company. It's at Fight for the FTR. Evan, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Thanks so much for having me on. Glad to be here.
You've heard the developments this morning. It sort of falls in line with what your organization is out protesting about.
Absolutely. And I think it's actually really important that people understand that this is not just a case where what the FBI is asking for threatens our civil liberties and our privacy. It's actually a case where what the government is asking here threatens all of our public safety and security as well. Forcing a private company to offer its customers a weakened version of its product to essentially punch holes in the encryption, the layers of security that protect our airports, our hospitals, our water treatment facilities, that sets a precedent that's really going to put all of us in greater danger for the types of attacks that the government claims it's trying to prevent. So in this case, this isn't a debate between privacy and security. It's actually a case where the government is trying to undermine our security to push an agenda that's not going to make us more safe.
There are calls on the other side that say, you know, this is about keeping us safe and that this is a terrorist case. And how do you counter those? Because there's some pretty angry reactions on the other side of this.
It's true. And, you know, what I would say to folks that are pushing that narrative is that, unfortunately, it's just not how the technology works. People keep saying this is just about one phone. It's about this phone that belongs to a person who's deceased. Why should we care about their privacy? But again, this is not about the privacy of that individual. This is about forcing Apple to essentially write software that hacks, that could be used to hack every iPhone in the world. And once they do that, once that software is created, it's sort of out of the bag, per se. And anyone who can then find that software, which essentially amounts to a backdoor, whether it's a foreign government, a criminal hacker, your jealous ex-lover, could use that to hack into someone's phone and use that information against them. Further, it sets a precedent, again, like I said, that could allow the government to do this in future cases and essentially undermine the layers of safety and security that keep us safe around the world. Cyber attacks, as the government keeps reminding us, are one of the greatest dangers for public safety. And any attempt to undermine the security of our devices will actually make us much more vulnerable to those types of attacks.
You have so a protest
a trade-off here. It's actually something what they're pushing is not going to make us safer.
You have a protest scheduled outside the Apple store in Chicago on Michigan Avenue tomorrow at 5:30. 30 other cities across the country. How is the attempt? You've already had one of these in San Francisco too, right?
Yeah, and we're actually up to 40 cities now this morning. They just keep pouring in. These are being organized in a grassroots manner by our members and supporters on social media and via email who say, yes, I'll host one of these in my town, and then we start spreading the word about it. And it's really catching fire. I mean, we announced the one in San Francisco about 4 hours before it happens, and dozens of people turned up out of the woodwork to make their voices heard on this. And that's really what we're trying to do, is just give people a platform to let their concerns be heard, because this is really one of the most important battles over the future of our safety and security of our generation.
Evan Greer is a spokesperson for fightforthefuture.org. You can find the organization on Twitter at fightforTheFTR. We're out of time. That's the opening bell for today. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning. It's 5:57.